Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Relationships Rock. Today, we're talking about feeling stuck. And that's honestly a feeling that I think whatever stage in life you're in, you've definitely felt at some point. You know, whether it is when you were a child or a teenager and you were stuck in a certain home environment that was beyond your control and you couldn't really get out until maybe you had enough money or you were a certain age. Or maybe in dating, that horrible feeling of being stuck waiting and waiting for Prince Charming to finally come through, or even just really any prince or someone that's somewhat charming, and just to be able to move on with life and feeling stuck at a certain stage in life. Or whether you feel stuck in a bad marriage, and it might be hard to hear for those that are still searching for their spouse, but there are a lot of people who are stuck in marriages that they just wish they could get out of, whether it is for because of children, because of finances. They feel stuck. You know, it kind of reminds me of there's Dr. Seuss book that I think it's Places Where You Will Go, and he gets to this waiting room and it's all the people who are waiting, you know, and it's waiting for the water to boil. I remember that line, waiting for my next big break. You know, everybody at some point in life has been feeling stuck, and just this feeling of, I am waiting for something to come, for something to change. And we're gonna talk about that today. So I'm gonna be really honest for a moment. I was really excited for season two of Relationships Rock. I'm still super excited about it. There are so many topics that I have on my list still from last year that I wanted to address. And you know what? It just felt right to get started right after the Chagim, right after Sukkot, and I had my whole plan, my whole topics lined up, and lo and behold, October 7th happened. Really such a very sad and horrific moment for Jewish people, for humanity, if I'm being honest. And that was a moment where I just like froze, literally froze, probably for 2 days. I couldn't sleep, I couldn't eat, I couldn't think. I had to push myself to just, you know, literally do the basic stuff that I had to do on a daily basis. And it was really hard at that moment to make a choice. You know, do I continue with my plan? Do I continue with the episodes? Do I address what's happening? Do I talk about grounding yourself? Do I talk about coping? You know, where do I go from this? And after some, you know, reflection, I really felt like there was so much information out there and so much going on about the war that I almost felt that what would be most beneficial would be to just stay on track and talk about things that were already planned, that we're still going through. You know, even with a war in the background, so to speak, it's still, people want to get married, people are struggling. And I felt like that was the best thing that I could do. And I recorded those first two episodes, were really hard to record. I am so proud of myself, to be honest, that I recorded them. I think they came out great. But obviously, you know, I really had to like really get myself to that point. And about a week ago, they started releasing the hostages, and it kind of brought me back to this feeling of just feeling stuck, just this feeling of complete powerless. And I decided to kind of lean into that feeling and say, you know what? Let's talk about it, because this comes up throughout our lives. Like, yes, right now there's something happening that I think we all kind of relate to this feeling. But like I mentioned, whatever stage in life you're in, whether you are still in high school, whether you are dating, whether you are married, whether you're stuck in a job that you don't like, but you just have to keep going, whether you're stuck watching, you know, an older parent, taking care of them, providing for them, while at the same time having grandchildren and having teenagers, whatever stage in life you're in, this is so relatable. So this is why I kind of said, you know what? Let's lean into this topic and let's see if by the end of this episode, we can kind of get ourselves a little bit unstuck while at the same time understand and accept that it is a very normal human feeling. There's a psychologist by the name of Seligman who did a study that was as follows. He took a dog and he would put it on what he would call a shuttle box. Basically, the bottom of the floor, you could shock the dog, like give him like a shock. And there was kind of like a bar that the dog could jump and get to the other side of the box where he would be shockless. And what Seligman found was that when he would press the shock, the dog would obviously try to jump and move around, and he would eventually figure out to go over to the other side, and he would learn how to escape the shock. And then he did a twist. He basically made it that it didn't matter where the dog went. If the dog jumped to the other side or it stayed, there was always going to be a shock. Now the whole box was shocked. Whether you were on this side of the fence or on this side of the fence, it didn't make a difference. And what happened was fascinating. The dog stopped jumping. Even when he removed the shock from the other side, it didn't matter. The dog had learned, I'm helpless and I'm just gonna get stuck here. And it stopped jumping. And he coined this term, self-helplessness. And that's actually what many believe is related to depression, to this feeling of, no matter what I do, nothing is going to change. Nothing is going to happen. You know, they also did experiments like this with elephants. They would take like baby elephants who are still pretty strong, but not as strong as a big elephant. And they would tie them to like a tree. And when they're little, you know, they would try pulling on the tree and they couldn't get out. What would happen was they would grow up and they would stop pulling on the tree. So now you have these super strong, huge elephants who could literally take down the entire forest, and they're tied down to a tree and they won't even try, right? They're kind of just there. They have this feeling of helplessness. I know a few weeks ago I did an episode on Harry Potter, and one of my favorite lines from there, numbing the pain for a while will make it worse when you finally feel it. I think it is so important to acknowledge our human feelings. It's okay to say, right now, I feel sad. At this moment today, it doesn't have to be the whole day. At this moment in time, I feel down. It's very important to acknowledge that you have normal human emotions. You know, I always tell people, give yourself grace for being human, for feeling human emotions, for going through the ups and downs. So while it is important to have coping mechanisms, maybe we'll get to discuss it in a little bit, it's also really important to acknowledge what you're feeling. So I thought it would be interesting to go through the five levels of grief. The five stages of grief is a theory developed by psychiatrist Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, and it suggests that we go through five distinct stages after the loss of a loved one. Now, we're not talking necessarily about losing a loved one, but I happen to think that these five stages are actually very applicable to whatever stage in life you're in where you feel this stuck, this self-helplessness, maybe these feelings of the colloquial depression or feeling just very down. And I think that at each stage, which is very distinct from each other, we can also learn some coping mechanisms and kind of think about, okay, how can I get through this really tough period in my life? So the five stages are denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and finally acceptance. The first stage is denial. That is the first stage of the grieving process, right? Denial helps us minimize that overwhelming pain of loss, right? We kind of have to process the reality of our loss. We're trying to survive the emotional pain. It's almost like your entire reality has shifted completely. And it can take our minds a little bit of time to adjust this new reality. You know, if you thought, I'm going to get married at 19, 20, 21, all of a sudden, you know, before your eyes, you're turning 25, mazel tov, happy birthday. And you kind of are in this denial stage of like, whoa, this is not what I pictured. Like, this is not where I saw my life going when I was 18. And now I'm 25 and I have zero control over it. So denial is not just an attempt to pretend that the loss doesn't exist, the loss of what you thought would be. But we're also trying to understand and absorb what is happening. It's almost like adjusting to a new reality. So what I would suggest for that denial stage is to embrace it, to say, wow, this is not what I pictured, and allow yourself to mourn what you thought would have been now, right? To say, okay, fine. Like, I had all this dream. I thought my marriage was going to be different. I thought it was going to be filled with X, Y, and Z. And this is not it. Obviously, we're not talking about major reflection. We're talking about just a difference in what you thought would be. So it's almost this like adjustment period, and allow yourself to do that. The second stage is anger. That's the second stage of grieving, which is, okay, we're trying to adjust to this new reality, but we're obviously experiencing extreme emotional discomfort. There's so much to process that anger may feel like it allows us to have like an emotional outlet, right? We're kind of trying to say, okay, fine, like let's first just release all the emotions of loss. Let's release all of that anger. And then, you know, I can work through it. What happens is sometimes in the stage of anger, we can feel very isolated in our experiences. We can feel like we are the only person who's going through this. We're the only person who's stuck in a horrible family situation. We're the only person who is at this stage in life just horribly stuck. I just want to get married and move on with my life and I can't. Or I'm the only person who hates their job. So it's important to know that oftentimes what makes us feel so alone and depressed is feeling that everybody else is not stuck. We almost imagine everybody else like galloping with joy and we're all alone in this experience. And this is where finding people who are going through similar situations is very powerful, because it can take away this feeling of I am all alone in this reality. You know, I also wanna kind of add here something that really helps in the denial and the anger stage is to think about what's within your control and what's outside of your control. And of course, this goes through any moment of grief, but I find that that really helps. You know, if you say, okay, what can I control in this stage? And what can I not control? Because sometimes when we are kind of coping with all of this anger and denial and all of these emotions that just want to kind of burst out of us and we feel so alone, we look at things worse than they are. And we think that, okay, I can't do anything, right? Self-helplessness, like there's no point of even trying to jump. I'm going to get shocked here. I'm going to get shocked over there. There's no point in dating. No one's going to like me. There's no point of trying to work my marriage. I'm stuck in a horrible marriage. And this is where I would suggest to literally make a chart of the things you can control and the things you can't control. There's something very powerful about feeling like you're able to control something in your life. We're human. This is why any moment that you feel like you lose control, it's really hard, because it almost makes you feel like, okay, I have free will and I have a place to go and I can choose my own path when I can control something. So I would suggest to kind of make this chart. Think about what is actually something that's out of your control, and that's out of your control. And what it is that you control, you can kind of work through it, while at the same time finding people who are also experiencing that. The third stage is called bargaining. And when you're coping with loss, you know, it isn't unusual to feel so desperate that you're like willing to do anything to alleviate or minimize the pain, right? And at this stage, sometimes people are bargaining in terms of like, I'll do whatever it takes, right? If someone did experience loss or someone's very sick, they're willing to offer anything, right? And it's amazing, because what happens is there's this acute awareness of our humanness in this stage. It's almost like we realize I have no control. This is where sometimes people kind of take advantage and they say, oh, do this segula. I have nothing against segulot. I'm Moroccan. But just that feeling of, oh, if I just take this on, my problem will be solved. If I just fix this, my problem will be solved. And it's almost this feeling of, I want to be able to do something that can influence change or create a different result. And it's very disheartening when you get to the stage and you realize, I have no control. You know, this is where, again, I say differentiate between what you can control and what you cannot control. And, you know, I happen to love this quote. I'm sure I've mentioned it before. We cannot control what happens to us. We can only control how we respond to what happens to us. The fourth stage is depression. And that is when, so you're done with the panic, the emotional fog begins to clear. And at that point, just the loss feels unavoidable. It's like, okay, fine, it's here. Like, it is what it is. And these are the moments when we tend to kind of retreat, pull inward as the sadness grows. Maybe this is where you become less social. You don't want to reach out to other people who are going through the same thing. And though it's a very natural stage in the grieving process, it is obviously the most painful and lonely one. And this is the stage that I would say you do need support. You do need to speak to somebody as you are processing all of this. The fifth step is called acceptance. And that is when we come to a place of acceptance. It's not that we no longer feel the loss. It's that we stopped resisting the reality of our situation. Right? We're not struggling to make it different. We're no longer on this survival mode of like, I just have to get through the day. It's kind of just saying, okay, this is it. Welcome your reality. And usually after acceptance, there's hope and there's the ability to create change and to move forward. So let's talk about how we can get unstuck. The first thing I'm going to suggest to you is to change your language. Instead of saying, I am stuck, you say, I am feeling stuck. It takes it from a, you know, permanent, I am stuck in a situation to I am currently feeling, it's fleeting, it's passing. The second thing is to identify what you actually want. What are you trying to change? What do you want to feel? Right? You're stuck in a situation. You feel stuck in a situation. I should follow my own advice. So what is it that you want to change? Is it that you want to, you know, let's say you're for a work situation, you want to increase your salary. Maybe you're in a relationship that's not so great. You say, I want to love myself more, or I want to have better communication with my partner, or I would love to get married, or I would love to embrace this chapter of my life. Think about what it is that you want. This will keep you focused on not identifying so much with the feeling, but kind of keep pushing you forward of what it is that you're trying to accomplish during this hard time. Number three, change your perspective. You know, remember that feeling stuck is a mindset, right? It's a very negative one, but a lot of times you could change your inner voice. We spoke about this in the episode about body image. You know, don't let your mind beat your body up. You know, that's kind of the line we said there. You can change your perspective. You know, how else can I see the situation? How will I feel about this in a year from now, in 3 months from now, right? How would my 80-year-old self offer me advice? What would that 80-year-old self say to me about this stage in my life? It will give you perspective. And by the way, I do think that's actually one of the most powerful things to do, is to kind of have your future self talk to you and make you realize that in the long run, in the big picture, what you're going through, while it is important, and as I mentioned, another Harry Potter quote, you know, just because it's in your head does not mean it's not real. It is real for you. It will help you kind of see the bigger picture of, okay, right now it's a big deal. Right now I'm drowning. In the long run, this is fleeting. This is passing. In Mir Sashem, it will be better. Number four, try to avoid something called analysis paralysis, which is you kind of just say, okay, I don't even know where to start. Like, I have no idea what step to take next. And what sometimes helps is to do like the smallest step that you could take. Think of like a list of things you want to do to accomplish your goal. Remember, you have to first go back to that. What do I want to accomplish at this stage in my life? What do I want to do in this feeling stuck? How do I get out of it? And you kind of do all these small steps and you force yourself to take one small step, whether it is a small step a day, a small step each week, kind of just to keep pushing forward. And last, but certainly not least, number five, you have to recharge. You have to focus again on yourself and feed your neshama. I once heard this quote, you know, you have to figure out what makes you come alive because the world needs people who are alive. I absolutely love that. You have to feed yourself. I know hashtag love yourself, but really think about self-care. Maybe it is taking a break from social media, which especially when you're feeling stuck and you're kind of comparing to other people, it can be really horrible. Maybe it's making a gratitude list or at night before going to sleep, you know, thanking Hashem for the things you do have. Maybe it is doing some inner work. Maybe it is focusing on filling your cup of doing things that make you feel good about yourself. Whatever the case is, these are five steps that I think will be really, really helpful. And here are some things that I don't want you to do when you feel stuck. Number one, try to not over-identify with the situation. Right? Like I said, you say, I'm feeling stuck rather than I am stuck. This too shall pass. The moment kind of goes through. Okay. Number two is don't focus on the stuck area of your life as if it's the only thing that's happening in your life right now. Yes, there's an aspect of your life that's not moving anywhere, that's stuck, but there's so many other things that are booming and moving and going forward. And, you know, like just because you feel stuck at work doesn't mean that all of your relationships or your health are bad. Just because you're not married doesn't mean that you're not, you know, booming at work or in family life or with friends or with your hobbies, right? Don't make the focus of your life the one thing that is hurting you, the one thing that is you're really struggling with. And last but not least, try not to blame other people. And most importantly, try not to blame yourself. You know, there are things that are beyond our control. And those are things that we can't control. Like, why worry about it? You can't control it. But when you kind of focus on saying, hey, other people did this to me, and you kind of start to compare to other people, that's really where all the dangers comes in. That's where you feel super isolated. That's where you feel like you live in this vacuum of everyone is doing stuff to you. Things are happening to you instead of happening for you. And, you know, I've said this many times, you know, ben parat yosef, don't look at other people. Don't look at where they are in their journey. It's just going to hurt wherever you are in yours. I couldn't possibly be talking about struggling in life or whatever state you're in and not talk about how everything in this world is an opportunity for us to work in our relationship with Hashem. You know, we've heard this, I think it's a Gemara, that every relationship that we have is a way for us to work in a relationship with Hashem. We have all these different types of relationship, a spouse, a child, a friend, a family member, in order to learn how to relate to Hashem in different ways. One of the hardest things when you're going through something like this is that you almost kind of want to push away. And I heard this actually from Rabbi Ephraim Goldberg. He said, you know, when you kind of blame God for what's happening to you, you're actually affirming that you believe that he's in control of everything. And it's actually very powerful to think about, because of course you want to push away. You want to say, well, like, how could you do this to me? You abandoned me. But what we're really saying is, how could you do this to me if you could fix anything at any moment? So I would encourage everyone at whatever state you're in to turn to God, to turn to Hashem, to use it as an opportunity, not just to work on yourself, on loving yourself, on changing your mindset and so forth, but also on using it to connect further. I want to end off with a quote. Sometimes the first step to getting somewhere is to decide that you're not going to stay where you are. So figure out where it is that you want to go, create the mind shift, focus on what you do have. Do not make this a vacuum of the one thing that's missing in your life. And Amir Hashem, I hope to hear good news soon. All the best.